What's up, Ego Hackers? Welcome to the show. Let me know if you guys can actually hear me. That would be nice. Let's do a quick sound check. Quick sound check. Can you guys actually hear me? Let's get that going in the stream chat, please. But let's see here. Okay. Oh, did you now? All right. Hello. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the show. All right. We're going to be doing something a little bit different. We're going to be looking at this crazy interrogation together. And we're going to be breaking it down together on the show to try to see if we can get any additional insight as to what's going on with this particular... this interrogation, because like I'm gonna be like reacting to this the entire time. Let's see if the interrogators know what they're doing. Let's see if we're able to glean some additional information that the interrogators are not able to get out of this. And Josh, this is quite nutty. This interrogation is insane. And we're going to be taking a look at this, because this is just entirely ridiculous. This whole thing is ridiculous. Special thanks to Lil Han Solo, as well as Laser Gun. It does look like a shinobi headband, doesn't it? This beanie. Although like my ears are like protruding out because I'm actually wearing headphones right now, and they're not my preferred headphones. I'd rather get the smaller ones, but we're gonna be doing a lot more reaction content, provided I don't get like nailed for copyright on it, which happens like all the time, and it's really annoying, but we'll see how that is. But no, I don't need to work for the CIA. No, I've been avoiding that actually for quite a while, so no, don't be making comments like that. I would prefer not to work for an intelligence agency. So now, being a contractor, however, you know, it's fine. Like I already do assist people with interrogations. I even assist attorneys with jury selection to help them get the best outcomes for attorneys. So I already do that too, but yeah. Well, I mean, thing is though, technically, like my Typing Famous People streams always get copyright nailed. That's why they're taken down every single time. Yes, I am chilling. So it's a bit. I clash with Eric Strauss since when? That's a little weird. No, I think Central Intelligence is actually dominated by Heart Temple, I would say. Heart or Body Temple would be my opinion on that, but that's just an opinion. So anyway, let's get the show on the road. All right, here we go. Here's the crazy. Let me know if you guys can hear the sound just fine.
I'm not demanding, I'm asking nicely.
Oh my gosh, look at that. Look at that SE demon smile just coming right out of this guy, like right off the bat. By the way, folks, I did not exactly like watch this whole thing. I only watched a little bit of it. But yeah, the SE demon smile. Look at that. It's like you're looking at Heath Ledger's portrayal of the Joker already.
As a kind civilian that also knows how to manipulate cops.
Oh, that's flagrant FI trickster right there.
This is 22-year-old Russell Jones. Just hours prior to the filming of this interrogation footage, he was arrested for helping a 15-year-old girl execute the brutal murder of her father.
All right, hold on. Let's go back just a second there. Helping a 15-year-old girl kill her father. All right, let's go back. Okay, so Russell Jones...
helping a 15-year-old girl execute the brutal...
Okay, so this is the... first photo that we get of the victim, that is Aaron Fryer. Okay, so what does he look like to you guys, like from a visual typing perspective? He kind of seems like Woody Harrelson. So just off of a visual typing perspective, I'm going to make the assumption that this guy is an ISTP, the victim. And then the guy on the left, one of the probably is a murderer or conspiracy to murder. We don't really know yet. And that the guy on the left is his Russell, but he's an obvious ENTP, definitely obvious ENTP, UDUF for sure. As a result, definitely UDUF. So, but yeah. You think the girl is an INTJ? No. No, I don't think so. No way. I don't think so. Let's find out, though.
Murder of her father.
Let's set our clock, shall we?
He's already abstracting a fake clock on his arm.
Approximately 3 seconds, you will witness an extreme shift in his demeanor.
An extreme shift in his demeanor. Yeah, because he was cognitive transitioning, okay, from his superego into his ego.
You're listening in on my conversations, aren't you?
This is how bad a UDUF ENTP can get, guys.
So, we can do this the nice way, or we can do it the hard way, and I can release my bipolar. Let's make a deal.
My bipolar. Let's make a deal.
One, thanks for the food. Two, I see Ellie and Davin, because they are both under my protection. Three, before you release Ellie to her parents, or parent, do a back...
You really think Russell the ENTP was simping hard after the girl? I don't know, because she's like with some other guy, I think.
Ground check, as well as a DNA test, as well as... Well, not DNA, a drug test. And if you find out that her parent, her mom... is in fact doing drugs, you are to release her to me. Tell him to release Davin and Ellie. Thank you. And I know I'm being recorded. You can keep that on there. Unless you're a nice cop, then I take it back.
You can keep it on
there. But if you're one of those two-timing, donut-eating piece of crap that don't like rules, a high school bully with a badge, I'm sorry, buddy, but I eat high school bullies.
Let's make a deal. I know, right?
So, you want the whole story? Make a deal, or I let out my bipolar. Your choice.
Let's make a deal or let out my bipolar.
The following footage contains never-before-seen personal accounts of the suspects involved in this crime. Through in-depth interviews, we've obtained rare insight into the minds of three criminals who display behavior that is among the most disturbing we have seen.
All right, yeah, so that was the girl that you just saw.
Yet.
I can still twist your little mind.
Aaron Fryer's murder was reportedly one of the most gruesome homicides.
Okay, so Aaron Fryer, that's the victim, and that's the murder weapon, basically an aluminum baseball bat.
It's Medford police had seen. The investigative team assigned to the case knew there was significant cause for concern, just from viewing the crime scene alone. Aaron's two youngest daughters, Sierra and Olivia, walked out of their bedroom the morning of...
Okay, yeah, so just for context, this suspected ISTP victim had two daughters, and Ellen was one of those daughters, and Sierra was the other one.
October 2nd.
I don't even know what Sierra's type is. I don't know what Ellen's type is either. The only one I'm absolutely sure about is the Russell guy being an ENTP.
2017, to find the horrifying evidence of the crime, but their father was nowhere to be found. The two, who were not yet in high school, called their father's girlfriend for help, and it was not long before the police were involved. Only a few hours later, investigators picked up and detained three young individuals, walking roadside a short distance from Aaron's abandoned Silver Mercury marquee. His eldest daughter, 15-year-old Ellen Rose Fryer, was part of the...
All right, so let's take a look at Ellen Rose Fryer, the 15-year-old. So visually... she looks super responding, like extra responding. cares a little bit about color, has the necklace. I would say I'm going to have to go with introverted feeling hero with her. So I'm between ISFP or INFP for this woman, this 15-year-old, definitely. Now, given that she basically conspired to murder her own father, you could make an argument that there's a chance that she's more likely pragmatic instead of affiliative, and expert intuition trickster is not so aware of consequences, basically. It's not like that movie that you see Where the Crawdads Sing, where the main character of the film is an ISFP woman who did succeed in getting away with murder. But that was expert intuition mastery, according to that fictional work, where she was able to plan out every possible consequence and even react in real time tactically to that situation. But I have yet to see or hear this woman speak yet, so I'm not entirely sure. But right now I'm going with FI Hero, and my current working theory is it's closer to ISFP, especially like with the ruffles of her top that she has here. So we're gonna work with that for now.
The trio, her 19-year-old boyfriend, Gavin Curtis McFarlane.
All right, Gavin Curtis McFarlane. Okay, so if I remember correctly, this is the actual guy that killed her father, and this is her boyfriend. So she's 15, he's 19, if I remember correctly. Visually, he looks like an introverted sensor. Definitely introverted sensing. I don't think he's an ENTP, but there's a chance he could be an ENTP. Definitely not an INTP. I'm thinking heart temple. Thinking heart temple so far with him. So ISFJ or ENTP would be my initial guess for Gavin.
And his longtime friend, 22-year-old Russell Pierce Jones.
And Russell Pierce Jones, we already established, is absolutely an ENTP.
It's a company.
A UDUF1.
Nader.
What's your first name?
Mike.
Okay. Mike what?
Smith.
Mike Smith? Okay.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like one of those weird names.
Mike Smith does sound like a very common...
You sure it's not Russell?
Well, that is one of the names that I've heard.
Okay. I haven't patted him down or anything. Go ahead.
I don't really have any weapons or anything.
Okay, well, that makes me feel a whole lot easier, right?
Yeah.
Just go ahead and stand here and spread your feet real quick.
I probably would be really stupid saying this.
Uh-huh.
I probably would be really stupid saying... It's so funny how ENTPs consistently think they can talk their ways out of, like, any situation.
Did you happen to notice my wrists at all?
Your wrists? What about them?
Well, I stick one. The thing is that I can dislocate my wrist.
Okay, don't do that though, please.
Okay, you seem like a nice one.
So I appreciate it.
I won't make it hard on you.
Also, to the ego hackers who are watching this live stream, okay, so if you have like links to like funny ass or any type of compelling interrogations or whatever, or anything similar to what we're doing on the stream, just DM me in Discord, guys, so we can do these more often. It's just a lot of fun. Like, Laser Gun has been spending a lot of time watching these recently with Lil Han Solo as well. So it's just been funny watching the girls just like geek out over these interrogations and whatnot. And I'm just like, okay, sure. I'll just make a show out of it, because why not? Why not make a show out of it? So here we go.
All right.
I only make it hard on the bad ones.
I actually started my own protection business.
Did you?
Yeah.
What kind of protection?
I know it's kind of risky.
quite down for neuro ENTPs.
Okay, so you're gonna protect like runaways?
They have to run away for some reason.
Yeah. So you provide protection for runaways and get them like a place to live?
Yeah.
Okay.
Give them a place to live. Oh my God.
Ellen was a sophomore student at South Medford High School, Medford, Oregon, and Gavin was a previous student who had dropped out a quarter before his graduation. Ellen would tell police that she met Gavin walking through South's hallways. According to Ellen, she reached out via Facebook Messenger and started a conversation that would evolve into a forbidden romance. She, only 15, was underage.
All right, yeah, so in this photo, definitely got that FI hero approach, changed the color of her hair. He has that ENTP smile. It's almost like a forced smile, because you could see that the way that the face at the bottom doesn't exactly match the eyes. The eyes are overdone versus the face is communicating two different things. This is like an FI trickster smile, essentially. So it's a forced smile. Because it's a forced smile, you're looking at like a crusader perspective, whereas her smile is actually legitimate.
Age, and Gavin, 19, was her lover. Friends and family were appalled, but no one as much as Ellen's father. Aaron, in addition to Ellen's mother, Maggie, immediately set clear boundaries. She was no longer allowed to see Gavin. Characteristic to many teenagers who do not get their way, Ellen rebelled. She snuck out and lied to see him, secretly maintaining their bond. It was not long.
Oh, yeah. I mean, doesn't he look like Dylan Klebold? Let me see. Columbine shooters. Let's see here. Images. Okay. Oh, my. Although this guy might be NTP, might be ISTP. Let's see. Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold. Yeah, Dylan Klebold looks very ENTP-ish in this photo, for sure.
Long before Ellen's lies caught up to her, and Aaron discovered that, instead of staying the night at a friend's, as she'd been claiming, she was sleeping over.
So if that's her backpack, like, kind of like a very colorful backpack, so more evidence that she's probably ISFP.
At Gavin's. Aaron, furious, stormed over to Gavin's house, pounded on his door, and threatened him, warning him not to come near his daughter again, or else. It was following this incident that the couple, in addition to Russell.
So Aaron Fryer making that decision, it kind of sounds like he's being all ISTP, you know, establishing boundaries, minds up away, expert sensing parent, you're not going to do this, or this will happen, this is the consequence you'll have. TI heroing from that perspective.
Who claimed to own a protection business, developed an insidious plan that reached far beyond sneaking out or running away, as is typical of many teenagers. They began to conspire to murder Ellen's father, who Ellen alleged had abused her, although they initially intended to execute their plan after.
So Ellen made the claim of, I'm being abused by my father, which got these two crusader dudes to, like, I guess, simp after her or whatever. Masculine idealism came into play, masculine altruism came into play, and then as a result of that, they were willing to, like, murder for her or something.
After the new year, when Ellen would turn 16, Ellen began to claim the abuse was growing worse.
And I was not happy with the text.
And that's the one that talked about the abuse?
Yeah.
Okay.
He was not happy about the text, so she made this claim, and then the UDUF ENTP with his FI masculine primary is like, oh, okay, this is obviously not a good thing. I need to step in. I need to help in some way.
And further, that she was pregnant with Gavin's child. This spurred a sense of urgency that drove them to act sooner rather than later. On the Saturday preceding the crime, when Ellen was absent attending a high school band event, Gavin and Russell attempted to break into her house through her bedroom window with murder in mind, messaging Ellen all the while. They quickly found that Aaron's girlfriend was asleep in the room and ran off. Although the attempt drew attention and concern, the police were not involved at that point. Aaron would pick his daughter up from the band event, take her and her siblings Halloween shopping, and treat them to Burger King the next day, and return to their home to watch a Sunday night movie. The events that followed the next morning were a tragic contrast to this seemingly wholesome day of family events. Gavin and Russell again arrived outside of Ellen's bedroom window in the early hours of that Monday morning. Ellen prompted Gavin to enter, and he obliged, while Russell remained outside in her yard. Over a period of an hour.
Okay, so the FI hero girl literally opens the windows as part of this conspiracy for murder.
Or so, Gavin and Ellen whimsically discuss their future, full of marriage and lifelong love.
From that photo, gosh, Gavin, he just so looks like ENTP.
But this was only to pass time. They were waiting for Aaron, who rested on the living room couch to fall asleep. Eventually, they heard snoring, and Gavin began to make his way to the living room. His first attempt failed when he accidentally kicked a trash can. It was still dark. Aaron woke up, Gavin retreated to the bedroom, and Ellen pretended that she had to use the restroom. Oblivious to his impending fate, Aaron purportedly said to Ellen, "Stop scaring me with all these people breaking in lately." When the two...
Okay, so Aaron's expert intuition mastery, assuming he's ISTP, maybe we'll see, but was like, well, hold on, all these people breaking in lately, he doesn't know what's going on. His SE parent is just like, yeah, something is happening. I don't know what's happening. I don't know what's actually going on.
Two heard his snoring once more. Ellen handed Gavin an aluminum baseball bat, something Aaron had kept close by for protection, and told Gavin, take him out. After Gavin was finished, he sent Ellen a message informing her that it was done. Russell, who had stood outside with a machete for backup, entered the home at that point to assist with transport.
With a machete, wow, okay.
Aaron's body. Russell reported that he was shocked and that he immediately...
It's always the ENTPs who are ready with their blades every time.
Retreated to the bathroom, sickened by the scene of the crime. Aaron's face, as shared by Russell, was scary. Due to the nature of Aaron's fatal injuries, Gavin wrapped a towel around Aaron's head and a blanket around his body. Russell holding the blanket at Aaron's feet and Gavin holding it at his head.
Yeah, definitely. Gavin kind of looks UDSF, I would say.
Carried his body out to Aaron's own car and hoisted him into its trunk. Ellen was the last to re-enter her home. She stole money out of her recently murdered father's wallet, said goodbye to her sisters, who later told police they heard their father say a bad word when they were just waking up for school, and retrieved her dog before leaving. The trio proceeded to drive to Walmart while Aaron's body remained in the trunk.
Okay, a little bit of an SE demon thing right there. For sure. He almost looks a little bit like Justin Bieber to a point. But no, definitely the black on black ENTP thing.
Trunk.
I mean, look at me. I'm kind of dressed the same way.
Ellen used the money she had stolen to buy junk food and hair dye. Before leaving, they walked into an SSI building so that Russell, who was on disability for reasons we'll learn later, could retrieve money with Gavin serving as his rep payee. The following eerie footage captures these moments.
All right, so here's, on the left we have Russell, and on the right we have the supposed ISFP girl, which, just looking at how she's dressing, it's more and more evidence that she's ISFP, I think.
They dumped Aaron's body off an embankment along the side of a road. Also off the embankment alongside the road, they threw various incriminating pieces of...
this is so stupid. People like with criminology, like, it's so stupid. What are they even doing?
Trash and clothing articles. They ditched Aaron's car and walked away with plans of hiding low in an abandoned house and eventually retreating to California.
He dropped his body off on the side of like a pretty well-known road, man. Like some late.
Okay, so this is one of the interviewees that they have, one of the students, that guy. He gives me like an ENFP vibe, but I'm not sure yet.
He was like walking her dog and then found his body.
We interviewed dozens of friends and family who knew these suspects, and we found that almost all of them...
This guy, I maintain he's an ESTP.
...shared the same sentiment.
I spent like the whole year with her and Dan doing competitions and whatever.
SE Hero, factual.
Someone pulled me aside.
Direct.
Was like, did you hear what happened with Ellie Fryer? And I was like, no, I haven't heard anything. And literally a week or two previously, I had spoken to her and been around her.
It shocked me.
Concrete, it's very concrete. Just sticking to the facts, direct. I'm gonna go with ESTP for that guy.
It was a shock.
It was a little bit shattering. It was a murder and a...
Shattering Effie Child statement.
Really kind of mysterious and gruesome one, and... I don't think anybody was expecting that.
All signs aside, no one expected that this would happen.
Think about this. Your daughter's 15, 16.
Think about this. And then he's giving a hypothetical scenario. So he's expert thinking. He's abstracting with expert intuition. He's being informative. I think it's likely this guy is like a clone of Chris Taylor.
And she's with a grown-ass man doing drugs. I would tell him never talk to my daughter again. And it's like some Romeo and Juliet type, you know what I mean? They're not supposed to be together, but they want to be together.
Romeo and Juliet.
Okay, they're not supposed to be together, so he's made an affiliative statement there.
Laws could be applied there because of the 3-year age difference.
What is the Romeo and Juliet law?
So they do something drastic, you know. And unfortunately, it was taking Aaron's life in such a messed up way.
They found, like, actual evidence of them planning to kill both Ellie's father and...
They found. Okay, so Essie, yep. Let's see if we could skip ahead a little bit. Here we go.
Even that far away, I don't think, in a ditch. We're caught, like, not that long after in the car, I think, which is crazy. In Medford police, at least, say it's one.
Experts designed this room to spur feelings of discomfort, isolation, and unfamiliarity.
Okay, so experts designed the interrogation room in order to make the subject that they are interrogating uncomfortable ahead of time. So let's watch this.
The interrogation has already begun. Throughout the following interrogations, we will...
So 40 seconds in.
Analyze all forms of communication, forensic linguistics, and the complex relationship between suspects' criminal behavior and unique underlying psychology.
Let's see if they get it right.
Only hours previously, Ellen stood outside her home while Gavin murdered her father. After she wrings her hands and cracks her fingers...
Okay, this is an extroverted sensing response. Wringing their fingers, cracking fingers, whatnot. Obviously signs of discomfort.
One by one, she stared.
But notice how she's sitting so stoic, which is typical of an outcome type, versus where you saw Russell earlier is very movement oriented.
They're stoically at the camera.
Very journey oriented.
Her behavior is markedly inconsistent with the nature of her recent experiences. An important aspect of reading body language is observing
remarkably inconsistent with the nature of her recent experiences. Okay, this is one of the big things that interrogators consistently fail at, and that is being able to handle cognitive transition from people. They just no. No.
Individuals baseline nonverbal cues followed by clusters of nonverbal.
Okay, so baseline is important because baseline is typically a person's ego. Unless they're UDUF, they can have two baselines.
...cues, which can occur consecutively or simultaneously. Comparing these in the framework of individual circumstances, including environment, is an additional critical consideration. Upon contemplating Ellen's nonverbal language, also note her paralanguage, or the language that she conveys through vocal tone, pitch, prosody, volume, etc. They may assist law enforcement in building...
So this is all extroverted sensing data that they're going over right now.
...in criminal profiles, determining suspects' motivations, or even detecting deception. Ellen shows little to no arousal physiologically, behaviorally, or emotionally. Mark this as our first significant behavioral observation.
Okay, likely because she's unconscious developed is why, you know, her FI is just, like, kind of turned off.
Yeah, so that's the interesting thing, is that if you met Ellie, she doesn't seem like the type of person that would hurt somebody. She really was
FI heroes oftentimes don't look that way.
Sweet and soft individual. I think that's what was so shaking about it, was that it didn't really make sense to me that someone like Ellie would do that. Didn't seem in her character at all.
She was really sweet. She, like, was a really great person, so I was like, okay, I can be friends with this person.
She just seemed like a normal 15-year-old girl.
Many classmates...
Yeah, because extroverted thinking inferior has an amazing tendency to wear masks in the same way ENTPs do. But in my experience, introverted feeling heroes, when it comes to the masks that they are particularly skilled as much as ENTPs are at wearing masks.
New Ellen is...
ISFPs do it to fit their environment, whereas INFPs do it to see... To fit whatever, not necessarily the environment that they're in, but what could happen in the environment with expert intuition parent.
The girl who always raised her hand in class. She was accounted as intelligent, polite, and kind. But something that few could later explain lied dormant in Ellen, hiding amidst high school band trips, homecoming dances, and AP classes. Here.
All about them AP classes. ISFP girls love them, their AP classes.
That something sits patiently and composed, waiting for an investigator in an empty...
Even though they're oftentimes treated like airheads when the reality of the situation is they're not. Bayonet, for sure, is the most brilliant ISFP woman I've ever met in my life. And oftentimes ICP women are just like judged as this, you're just automatically an airhead by default, like the whole dumb blonde thing, when the reality situation is that's just not the case. It's actually just a mask that they put up to make themselves look innocent, or at least in an attempt to try to preserve their innocence as much as they can.
The interrogation room. The following interrogations have been analyzed by a qualified team, including two licensed attorneys.
Ooh, two licensed attorneys that are likely Mind Temple people or INTJs, ooh.
One being a former criminal prosecutor and a psychologist trainee.
Hi.
All right, here's this lady. She comes in, she opens the door. She's like, hi. But let's take a look at her for a second. So visually, what is this woman? This woman looks expert feeling hero for sure. And then obviously you have her at the top right here. She looks expert feeling hero. She's a bit more heavy set, overweight. Seems affiliative naturally due to expert feeling hero. I would type this woman. She does not seem very flamboyant. She seems to be dressing for comfort in this regard. So I'm going to say that this woman is a gluttonous ESFJ woman.
Hello. Are you Ellie?
Hello. So Ellie's facing down her golden pear. Her golden pear would be able to read her like a book.
Oh. What's your name? I have the right to remain silent.
Okay. You do have the right to remain silent.
The investigative team on this case may have selected this specific investigator, Detective Stephanie Smith, to conduct Ellen's interrogation for tactical reasons. Police.
Well, yeah, because she's her golden pear.
Psychology experts outline that investigators with traits similar to suspects.
Okay, yeah, that's okay. That's technically accurate. You would definitely want to be. Now, here's the thing, though. Like, if I was to make recommendations to interrogators about how to do this properly, you interrogating men, you would want a golden pear female, basically. Or a super ego female to interrogate men, basically. Due to their high level of perception, they'll be able to see into the man very much so. However, with a woman, you want to also use a golden pair or super ego as well with a woman. You do not want to use, like their polar opposite, because there's high camaraderie there, and then the women will just like identify with each other, and they won't be able to get any actual results from an interrogation perspective.
Are more likely to succeed in building rapport and facilitating open, honest communication. This concept applies to the broader field of psychology as well. It may be used as a vehicle of manipulation to appear more likable, otherwise termed the liking similarity effect. Ellen is more likely to respond positively to a female who speaks softly.
Okay, that's not true. Whatever. No, this is entirely ignorant of psychological type.
Than a male who speaks gruffly. Ellen immediately displays a high level of resistance.
Well, for women, you want, when you're interrogating women, definitely using their golden pair is ideal.
Interrogation unfolds, Detective Smith will navigate each obstacle to open communication that Ellen throws her way.
Is that what you're choosing to do?
Yes.
Okay.
Is that what you're choosing to do? That's an expert intuition child statement.
Okay. I at least need to know your name, though.
NI Child Defiance.
You don't want to tell me your name?
Rain.
Mark lying as our second notable behavior observation and display of resistance. Ellen's first word is a lie, and she lies about her name. Lying is a common exploitive tool. Compulsive lying or pathological lying is characterized by lying about subjects' surrounding identity.
No, it's extroverted thinking inferior. You don't know. And it's always interesting to watch ISFPs really rely on extroverted thinking inferior when it comes to people. And it's like, oh, okay, yeah, you don't know. And they always imagine to themselves that they have plausible deniability when they actually don't. And it's just to protect their ego.
As a means of control.
Okay, Rain, well, if you choose that you want to talk, I'm around, okay?
If you choose, T.I., that you want to talk, N.E., okay?
I would like to know why I'm in handcuffs and why.
I would like, F.I., to know, T.E., why I'm in handcuffs. Okay, which is expert sensing.
I'm detained. I have the right to know.
Okay.
And I do have the right to know. Okay, the right. So she's consuming justification at that point through expert sensing.
Ellen is angry. This reflects in her expression, which is a significant contrast between her flat disposition minutes previously. Her eyebrows are raised unusually high, and she holds them there as she asks the investigator with a childlike voice in an indignant, defiant tone why she's...
It's so interesting because, like, when you're interrogating, like, an ENTP, for example, or an ESTP, their FI trickster, they can actually shape their face in different areas, and they're actually a little bit harder to detect. But the fact that their face is more chaotic is that if you can actually just realize from an ENTP perspective when they're doing that chaotic approach, that's how you know you have them. But some interrogators have a hard time detecting that.
Is being detained.
Why am I being detained?
Her eye contact is unfaltering. Advanced situational awareness.
Yeah, it's unfaltering because she's anti-optimistic. That's why. Okay, it's introvert intuition child.
This training would identify this behavioral cluster.
She's also trying to exhibit some amount of control, so she's cognitive transitioned into her ENTJ side to facilitate this conversation.
...is indicating a need for dominance.
Yes, oh my god, a need for dominance. What do ENTJs do? They dominate.
So we got a call of concern at your house today. Well, first I'm going to tell you all your rights.
My house.
I'm going to tell you all your rights, okay?
My house, to make it look like, okay, she initiated there, but again, it's ENTJ subconscious.
And then I'm going to explain to you what's going on, and if you choose to talk after that, that's completely up to you.
This is a lesser-known rapport-building tactic that functions by reminding suspects they have some level of autonomy. Ellen appears to grow more...
Yeah, okay, so this is actually a very, very good thing that the interrogator is doing right here. Because when you're dealing with a pragmatic NI user, so when you're dealing with a wayfarer, it's really like a wayfarer criminal, wayfarers being ENTJ, INTJ, ISFP, ESFP. You make it look like they have some kind of freedom and whatnot, and be like, here's what you have afforded to. And if you lead with that, it can usually get them to calm down and open up just a little bit, because you're showing respect to their NISE cognitive axis.
More receptive.
Okay.
You have the right to remain silent. So you said you want to remain silent.
Then I would like to know why I'm detained.
Okay. So we got a call of concern at your house today. And your little sisters are pretty scared about what happened there. And so...
Okay. This was a very good statement by the ESFJ. I'm not entirely sure why they're not already commenting about it within this analysis, but what she's basically done is the ESFJ woman interrogator has used her introverted feeling nemesis at this point to explain, you know, hey, there's this bad thing that's happening to your sisters, okay? And what she's trying to do is use her FE hero to cultivate sympathy towards Sierra, her sister, for example, as to what's going on in an effort to try to elicit response that may appear whether or not she has some culpability of some kind. So that's actually very good because it's taking advantage of this ISFP's extroverted feeling nemesis.
What we're doing is trying to figure out what happened. And the police went to your house, and we're also a little bit worried about what's going on over there.
Detective Smith is vague that law enforcement is worried about what is going on over there, Ellen's house. At this point, she's trying to build rapport.
Okay, yeah, saying that they're worried about that. I mean, it's extroverted sensing critic trying to get her SI critic to do something, but it's not going to work.
Or, this is a soft and indirect approach. Detective Smith wants Ellen to fill in the gaps.
I haven't been there all night.
Okay. This is where the ISFP failed, because this is where she starts losing her plausible deniability at this point. If the ISFP had any sense, she would have not responded to any of that statements whatsoever, but instead she fell for the bait.
Well, there are things that would indicate otherwise.
There are things that would indicate otherwise. So that's TI inferior being like, uh-uh.
I gave you guys what you wanted. Normally,
okay, remember, there is this game theory concept known as the prisoner's dilemma, where they all are taking advantage of the innate solipsism within all human beings, regardless of them being man or woman. and to the point where they interrogate them simultaneously, and eventually they all sell each other out in an effort to make a better outcome for themselves, essentially. Every now and then you'll get that one criminal, that one prisoner, that one suspect that will actually take all the blame in an effort to save the others that were implicated within the conspiracy. It's rare, but it does happen. But typically the prisoner's dilemma from a game theory perspective is what's actually unfolding here.
It would take about 24 hours to get missing persons report if there wasn't evidence of blood. Then, if the person's missing for a total of 48 hours, hence 48 hours.
The problem with UDUF ENTPs is that UDUF ENTPs see themselves as more intelligent than everybody else. It's ESFP superego. It literally believes it's more brilliant than every other person. It assumes, it makes the assumption, a TI trickster assumption, that everyone else is stupid, basically. And oftentimes UDUF ENTPs, you know, from a criminal mindset, just have no clue that every time they talk, they're just making it worse for themselves and everyone else. And they have, that ESFP superego has such a hard time shutting up.
Our mystery dumps. Then you do your little search posse. By then, Gavin, me.
He's talking about the particular journey and the system that he would expect law enforcement to be following, and trying to like game around that situation and come up with a better outcome. The reality of the situation is that doesn't work.
And her would be in California.
And I'd like to talk to you about that, but with your wishing to remain silent, it's really difficult to kind of get to the bottom of all of that.
Then let's talk.
Cone Man, are you assuming that Eric Strauss is an ENTP? Because he's not. He's an ESTP.
Okay. So what I want to do is make sure you understand what I told you about what your rights are, because that's super important, okay? So can we go through those one more time?
Yes.
Okay. So you have the right to remain silent. What does that mean to you?
What does that mean to you? That is a very good, very good tactic. And because by saying what does that mean to you, she's actually already trying to establish the stream of consciousness by asking an open-ended question to the FI hero. The FI hero is naturally informative. So this is basically an opportunity for Ellen here to hang herself within this interrogation.
Detective Smith reiterates the Miranda rights and asks Ellen to explain what each right means to make sure there is understanding.
No, it has nothing to do with making sure understanding. It has everything to do with this interrogator trying to create a stream of consciousness in order to gather as much information about the subject, okay? About the suspect. Come on.
States often require this if suspects are 15 years of age or younger.
So, this morning, your little sisters ran over to your mom's house and told your mom about something that worried them that they saw in your house, okay? And what that was a large amount of blood. And they described a few things that you had been doing at the house, kind of the way you said goodbye, and that it worried them because they weren't sure if they were gonna see you again.
Oh, the FI hero doing the right thing with ESFJ Shadow and saying goodbye. They always have to do it. They always, always have to do it. They feel so bad about not saying goodbye. I've had to deal with many ISFP in my life who, they always have this tendency of looking back and trying to do the right thing because they never, ever, ever, ever want to leave a bad impression and always want to leave everyone else down easy, let everyone else down easy, which then causes them to basically hang themselves in the process, which is exactly what Ellen has done here already.
And they love you, and that really worried them a lot about
look at her just assaulting that SI critic,
where you were going and why you were leaving so quick, because they care about you and they love you.
She frames the story from Ellen's sister's perspective, describing how scared they were to appeal to Ellen's humanity, but Ellen seems relatively unaffected.
You know, do you love your sisters?
Yeah, unaffected. Oh, there's blood in the house. The typical response would be like shock or potentially crying or, you know, sadness. But she's entirely stoic, still inside of ENTJ's subconscious, whereas the ESFJ here is trying to get her closer and closer to her ESFJ shadow. Which this is consistently working against Ellen at this point, because it's obviously an unnatural frame and an unnatural response, and the ESFJ is exposing the unnaturalness of her behavior.
Yes. And you care about kind of how they feel about you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anybody would. You know that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, kind of, that's what we need to hash out, you know? What did your sister see? Why are they worried?
Yeah, what did they see?
Yeah, what did they see? As he child within the ENTJ subconscious, but also from an interest-based point of view, this is the suspect trying to gather up information to know what the opponent knows so that she can potentially utilize extroverted sensing parent to create a tactical response based on what the opponent knows or claims that they know. That's all it is. It's completely self-serving. It has nothing to do with anyone else at this moment.
That's what I'm going to ask you.
It's one of the reasons. It's how you know that they're lying.
To be honest, I don't have a clue.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest, I don't have a clue. Okay. Here's the thing, though. It's not honest, because you'd be crying over your blood and your over blood being found in your house and your sister's being freaking out at this point, especially as an FI hero. No, you're lying.
Ellen becomes abruptly animated. She raises her eyebrow sharply and they linger there. Something about the expression seems off. It doesn't reach the rest of her face, indicating chirality, or match her verbal expression. This abnormal behavior further supports that Ellen struggles with issues of affect or apathy. Ellen's expression, whatever it is.
Okay, this is important. So, the narrator is absolutely correct here with what the narrator is saying. Body language being abruptly animated and then also struggling with affect or apathy. So, okay, of course she's going to be struggling with affect. You know, affect would be more of an extroverted intuition response. That's actually natural to her being an ISFP, okay? However, the apathy is very, very interesting. So the apathy would be basically, apathy comes from the body temple type of the INTP. Sometimes also ESFJs can be very cold and heartless from an apathetic perspective. So ISFPs, when they're starting to transition into their shadow and they know that their ENTJ subconscious is not able to subjugate or dominate the conversation, then they turn a switch from their dominance approach to an apathetic approach. And that's exactly what she's doing here. So the narrator definitely hit it on the nail on the head on this one.
Does not appear normal.
There's nothing more annoying to me than be treated, like especially with TI masculine primary as an ENTP, to be treated with apathy from the body temple. I absolutely loathe it, but I loathe it the most from an ISFP for sure, because that NI child is being really intentional with that apathy. They are choosing to be apathetic, and my any hero can see right through it, and my FE child is just like, wow, apparently, like, you don't value me enough when you're being, like, apathetic, when you're actually willfully choosing apathy. This is one of my biggest problems with the character of ISFPs. It's actually, you know, and sure, women do it, but I've actually experienced it way more with ISFP men, and I find it absolutely ridiculous. A couples counselor that I was with recently in terms of railgun, he did that a lot, and that really pissed me off every time, because I knew that his NI child was like willfully choosing to be apathetic. But the fact that this girl here is doing that is like just evidence of the fact that she continues the interrogator is basically winning. The interrogator is successfully getting her out of her subconscious and getting her closer to her shadow, which is what the interrogator wants, because her shadow is where the TI function is. Her shadow is where the truth is, and she's trying to extract the truth. So the interrogator is winning at this point.
Normal. Ellen's ex-best friend, Jillian McFeeters, commented on Ellen's mental health to investigators, stating that Ellen had displayed signs of bipolar disorder.
Switch would go off sometimes, and I mean, it was not very long. It was just kind of a woo, and then it was gone. But
this is
okay. So Jillian, that girl was very SE and direct. So she's a direct SE woman. She kind of sounds a little FI. So she's a direct. So, and this would be a girl with high camaraderie if she knew her. I would say that girl, Jillian McFeeters, is an INTJ just off of that.
This is a critical piece of information confirmed by someone who knew Ellen best. Ellen's mood fluctuations indicate that she suffers from heightened emotional reactivity and sensitivity in response to triggering stimuli. This contrasts with...
Okay, yeah, that's typical of extroverted sensing, pessimistic women, and, well, yeah, introverted wayfarers for sure.
Mood swing.
And, of course, Jillian McFeeters is an introverted wayfarer, so she's kind of, like, identifying using a camaraderie, because women, when they have relationships with each other, they want to have relationships with women that they identify with, because then they don't have to compete with those girls. Now, women they relate with, there is competition, because compatibility creates competition. Cognitive synchronicity, aka compatibility, creates competition between women, whereas cognitive asynchronicity, also known as camaraderie, women identify with each other so that they don't have to compete with one another, and that's actually how women become friends with one another. And it's no different here. Jillian McFeeters, as one of Ellen's friends, is a fellow introverted wayfarer like Ellen. And she's making these comments, but it's actually projection. You know, and interrogators really need to be aware of how female-on-female relationships and friendships work, because you can't exactly trust what they're saying, because literally women, they may be claiming that they're talking about other people, but almost always, 70 to 80% of the time, women are talking about themselves when they're actually talking about other women. And oftentimes even about other men, but especially other women. And interrogators are just completely unaware of this phenomenon, and it ends up becoming a problem over time. This is why you have to be really, really careful in law enforcement when you're taking statements, like you're doing detective work and whatnot, when you're taking statements from women about women, you have to be extra careful because of cognitive asynchronicity.
Things typical of bipolar disorder, which are not as transient.
You said that there was a large amount of blood. Mm-hmm. Is everybody okay?
That's what we're trying to figure out.
Okay, is everyone okay? So she's officially completed her cognitive transition from the domineering ENTJ side into the more looking like caring side of the ESFJ shadow. Oh my God, I don't know why those balloons are there. That's like really weird. But the point is, ISFPs, the way they work psychologically is that extroverted feeling nemesis is just worried about, worried consistently.
Okay, just let me know, we close in about 5 minutes.
Oh, you're kicking me out. Yeah. Oh, well, we'll have to, end the stream very shortly and pick it up. Oh yeah, so I'll title the stream part one, just so you guys know. This will be part one. We're gonna keep going for part two, but this will be titled part one for sure. Anyway, as I was saying about ISFPs is that extroverted feeling nemesis ends up becoming a problem, because extroverted feeling nemesis, oftentimes what it causes in ISFPs is that they know that they're selfish with FI Hero. They really know that, especially when they're wayfarers, because wayfarers are extremely, they have this outward thing with extroverted sensing in that they want to always look a certain way to people. So they know that they're selfish, but they don't feel good about themselves looking selfish to others. So because she, proof of her completing her transition into her ESFJ side is that all of a sudden she's starting to care about blood and her sisters and whatnot. And that's what's actually happened here. She has completed the her transition to the ESFJ, which you got to give props to this ESFJ interrogator at this point, being able to get her to transition to that side. and getting closer and closer to that TI function, which is what the interrogator is trying to do to get the facts of the situation. So now she's finally got her down into her FE nemesis and is starting to realize that she's worried about, that this girl's worried about looking uncaring, right? So you gotta give her props. You absolutely gotta give her props. So yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, it was a nice 1 hour stream, but yeah, guys, we're gonna save our spot here at 21:08, and we're gonna continue on with part two later. But yeah, this is our first dry run of psychoanalyzing interrogations. If there's anything else that you folks want me to psychoanalyze, just DM me in Discord or message me or DM me on Instagram. And or even on Facebook Messenger, and just tell me, give me a link. Hey, can you psychoanalyze this interrogation or XYZ social situation? And we'll make a stream about it, and we'll just go through everything that's happening from a human interaction standpoint. Hell, you could even do politicians from that perspective, as long as it's like kind of like fits this format. We can do kind of like some long form, but yeah, this is part one. We're going to be continuing to do analysis from this, and then maybe after a while I might get better at it and actually watch the documentary ahead of time. But I really don't like watching these ahead of time, because I want to be able to react in the moment to what is being said, because I don't want to like have any preparation for these. I think preparation actually harms the value of the stream itself. So it's hard for me to just bounce around, because I just take the show as it comes, which can be pretty difficult for people. But there's so much here always to talk about all the time. So yeah, the server link is not expired. It's discord.gg/egohackers. Okay, it's not expired. Let's take a look. Okay, discord.gg. Maybe I'm wrong. We'll find out. Ego hackers. Oh, look, it's not broken. It's working just fine. Okay, you're fine. discord.gg/egohackers. Take a look, guys. So, anyway, thank you all for watching and listening, and I'll see you guys later for part two.